Okay. This is the second time that Rabbi Levine has asked me to sub for him. And I think a bunch of you were here the last time we did this on Lag BaOmer. So at that time I gave certain long introductions. I think I'll spare you the long introductions this time. We'll just do a little bit of in the way of introductions. But as you know, from the last time, I like to work from text. And this way everybody can be on the same page, which is a good thing. And, of course, we encourage class discussions here. And as I've told you before, or as you've gathered, my main areas of interest are Midrash and Maharal. And those two areas kind of intersect when it comes to the subject of the Arba Malchios, which by now you're very familiar with. And we're going to look at some things that we have seen recently. And okay, guys, take a handout and a sitter. Take a sitter too.
Sitter?
Uh-huh. Okay. So Arba Malchios is going to figure very, very prominently, because this is a discussion of Hanukkah. And we'll see how all these things come together. We're going to learn some important midrashim. Some are very well known. Some are becoming well known. And we're going to go through some of those. And then we'll go in a little bit deeper into the what they mean. And we're going to end up with Moos Tzur, which is why you have the Sidurim there. So, okay. So what we have here, this first part in your handout, the first three pages come from a sefer called Ner Mitzvah. This was written by the Maharal, and it's on the subject of Hanukkah. And although they call it a sefer, really it's only about 20 pages or so. It's more of an essay. Yeah, take that. And the sitter. Take a sitter, too. Maharal lived in the 1500s.
What did you say the other one is? Ner Mitzvah?
Ner Mitzvah. You're going to have to. That's what we're looking at now. Okay, so as I say, it's really more of an essay than a sefer, but what some people do is they manage to pad it with all kinds of padding and turn it into a book that can be sold. But it's we're going to see that what the essence of the discussion is about. So I want to do some selections from here, because it provides certain midrashim that are important in relation to Hanukkah. Okay, so why don't we just go right to the text here. Okay, now the Maharal starts off with something that should be very familiar to you, and in the first column, on the right side column, a long quotation from Sefer Daniel, Perek Zion, Bays through Zion. This should be very, very familiar. We're talking about Daniel's vision. Take one and take a sitter. Huh? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. Okay. And what we have is Daniel's vision from Perek Zion, which we have learned recently. And I'm not going to read every word of it, but I'm just going to go through it. Take a sitter, Arnie. Take a sitter also. Okay, so it starts off, Chazah haviz bechazui im lele, va'aru arba ruche shemaya magihon lema rabba. Daniel has a vision at night, and he sees four creatures coming out of the sea, and this will be very familiar to you. Rabba chivon Rav Ravin, Salkan Min Yama, Shanin Da Min Da. He sees four different creatures coming out of the sea. And they're huge, as he describes them. So the first one, and I'm not going to go through every line, because the psukim are familiar, and we don't need all the detail, but we need this. What we do need is Kadmisa Ke'aryeh. The first one resembled a lion, okay? And then various details about what the lion looked like. Then a few lines further down, after the colon, it says Va'aru Chayva Acharai Tanina Dimyala Dov, or Dave. So then the second one, resembled a bear, or depending on how it's read, a wolf. Dave being a Ze'ev. And then the third one, he sees a third creature that Baru Acharai Kinamer, something that resembled a leopard. And then finally, the next night he has another vision, and he sees something, a fourth creature. He can't describe just what it is, but it's horrifying, it's terrifying, it's awesome, it's huge, it's terribly destructive and powerful. Okay, so we know already from what we've learned, we're well-versed, no pun intended, we're well-versed in this. So we know that these represent the Arba Malchios. The Aryeh is Bavel, the Dov is Paras and Madai, the Namer is Yavon. In fact, yesterday we were just learning in Daniel about Yavon, and the Rashi there that we did at the end of the session talked about the Namer. Take a sit or two. That represents Yavon, and that's very important here. And the fourth one being Edom. Okay, so now let me ask you a question. The point of this essay is about what? It's about Hanukkah. Okay, so what? How come he starts off with a whole discussion, and it's going to continue? We're not going to do all of it, but it's going to continue more, you know, more and more about the Arba Malchios. So what does this tell you? It tells you that you cannot really understand what Hanukkah is about unless you see it in context. He's giving us context. He's telling us, because if you think that Hanukkah was just an event that happened during the Greek occupation, and it was take it in a vacuum, in isolation, you're missing the whole point of what Hanukkah is. What Hanukkah is the liberation from Yavon, but that only in context of the number three empire of the four empires. And you have to see the big picture. And that's what the Maharal is trying to give us. He's trying to give us the big picture. Okay? So now, we're going to go a little further down in this column. At the end of the citation, where the parentheses is, where it says Daniel Zion, okay, it's Beyesh Lishol Ki Elu Dalid Malchuyos Shehemid Hashem Yisbarach Ba'olamo, and we could ask that about these four empires that Hashem instituted in His world. Ein Sofek Shelo Hayu Kach B'Mikra. This didn't happen by chance. This is a frequent concept in Maharal, that things don't happen to Klal Yisrael by chance. And Rak ki kach mechayev seder olamo. Rather, this has to be the outcome in the order, in the plan, the big picture that Hashem, with which Hashem created the world. Rabbi Sheng, here's a handout, and please take a sitter also. Okay. V'chein lama hayazeh sheyihu arba malchuyos davka. So why specifically four? And okay, so as I said, one thing we get out of this is the context, the background against which the whole Hanukkah story is seen. And we also learn something else. We have the information that Yavon, which is obviously the Malchus that we're talking about when it comes to Hanukkah, that it's symbolized by a nomer, by a leopard. And we'll get into that later on. But just keep that piece of information. Now we're going to go to another medrash that in which the Maharal is making his point. It says, "V'hinei timtza ki b'sha'ah shebara Hashem yisbarach es olamo," that from the very outset, from the inception of creation, Ramaz hakasuv elu dalad malchios, that the Torah actually tells us, gives us a remez to what's going to happen. That the whole world plan is discussed. And where is that? It's going to be in the second pasuk of the Torah. Now, when I first learned this, it made a tremendous impact on me. I say this in the Sefer, for those of you who have seen the introduction or the first chapter. The fact is, what does the first pasuk open with? Bereshis bara Elokim es hashamayim v'es haoretz. Bereshis, the Chazal say, bishvil reshis. That's us. We're the reshis. Reshis ariso seichem, says the Medrash. So the whole world was created for the sake of Bnei Yisrael, right? Which is a Judeo-centric view of the world. But that's how it's supposed to be. That's how it's that's how we are supposed to look at it. What we say, is it good or bad for the Jews? You know, everything is because if we're not for ourselves, who will be, right? So, but the whole intent and purpose of creation is for the sake of Klal Yisrael. That's what we're told in the first pasuk. And now we have the second pasuk. V'horet ha'isa sohu v'vohu v'choshech al p'nei sahom, right? And v'ruach elokim merachefes al p'nei hamoyim. Okay. Now the Medrash that the Maharal brings is for certain reasons it's fairly well known on that pasuk. It says Rav Shimon ben Levi pasar k'rei b'malchuyos. He explained this pasuk as a reference to the Arba Malchios. V'ha'aretz ha'isa tohu zu malchus bavel. And he has proof text for relating the term tohu to bavel. Shenamar, as it says in Yirmiyahu, ra'isi es ha'aretz v'hinei sohu, referring to the land of bavel. Okay, next, u'bohu zu malchus modai. Bohu is a reference to modai, or poras, because as it says in Megillas Esther, Vayavhilu Lahavias Haman. They hustled Haman, right, to the party. Behala means confusion, chaos. Right? And Bohu is chaos. So we see a connection to the threat of Haman during the days of Poras, and which is symbolized by the word Bohu. V'choshech. This is the famous phrase. V'choshech zu malchus yavon shehich shicha einehen shel Yisrael b'gezeroseihem, because they darkened the eyes of Klal Yisrael with the severity of their decrees and persecution. So we see darkness associated with yavon. And why I say this is a famous phrase, because we know that the holiday of Hanukkah is associated with Or and Neros and light, in opposition to the darkness of Yavon. Also refers to Torah versus Yavon. Also refers to Choshek. Also refers.
The darkness that was brought upon the Jews, I think, was more of the assimilation and the Greek culture,
okay,
rather than the physical oppression.
That's right. But even so, it was depressing, and at least to those who did not assimilate, it was
oppressive,
right? Also, darkness is a metaphor for golos, right? We always, you know, it's a well-known phrase, the long dark night of exile, right? And redemption is the breaking of dawn, the light relieving the darkness, okay? So that's why this is a fairly well-known phrase, because of the well-known idea of light versus dark in relation to Hanukkah. Okay, and then it continues, and we're finishing this piece of medrash. Shehaisa omeris lahem kisvu al keren hashor she'ein lahem chelek belokei Yisrael. And the Greeks This is also a very important piece of the Hanukkah story, that the Greeks told the leaders of Klal Yisrael, write on the horn of an ox that you have no part of the God of Israel. And we're going to get into that more when we get to the second text to explain that further and what it means. Al pnei ha-tzehom, on the face of the deep, zu malchus ha-rishah, she'en lo cheker kamo ha-tzehom. That this means the. You think Ronald Reagan invented the phrase the evil empire? This is the evil empire is Edom. Okay? That's a Chazal term. Malchus HaRisha'ah. Spielberg didn't invent it either. Okay. And why does Edom relate to the symbol of Tahom, of depth? Because just as the depths of the sea are unfathomable, so too is as is explained here in the next line, ma tahom azeh ein lo cheker. Af harishayim came. Just as the depths of the sea are unfathomable, so too are the rishoyim. What does that mean? Well, it could mean in terms of how is it that the rishoyim can get away with doing what they're doing in their persecution and domination for the last 2,000 years. How can it be that they can get away with this? And how can it be, is another way of looking at it, how long can they continue to do so? You know that, and because we don't know, we knew there was a fixed time for the three original exiles. Yeah, and we're using a sitter also later. So similarly, we don't know when the end of the last exile will be. So that, because it's unfathomable, right? We had all this stuff about attempts to predict the Cates and all that. It's still unfathomable. We still don't know. So in that sense, it's compared to the Tahom. And then the Medrash continues, V'ruach Elokim merachefes, and the Spirit of Hashem hovers, zu zeh ruach shel melech ha-moshiach. That is the end times with the spirit of the Moshiach, as it says in Yeshayahu, "V'nacha olav ruach Hashem," that upon the Moshiach will rest the spirit of Hashem. "V'ezu zechus mi mash meshes uba'a," and in what merit will it come? "Mirachefes al pnei amoyim bizchus hatshuva." As it says in Echo, Shifchi Chamayim Lipe. So, in other words, it envisions a Geula, which is built around Teshuvah, and then the Mashiach can come. And so, Ad Kan, the Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah, near the very beginning, on the second Pasuk in the Torah. Okay, so now we have some concepts that relate to Hanukkah as well as relating to the Arba Malchios that we can work with. So go to the next page, skip down, and on the left side, at the very bottom, there's two lines at the bottom, which starts a paragraph there. So we're gonna do some of that. Okay, Behine Hisba'er. And now we can explain what the wise men of Yovan, Masharatsu Baze, what were they trying to accomplish? She'amru, Kisvu al Keren Hashor She'ein Lachem Chelek Belokei Yisrael. That's the line that we read earlier. Okay, now we're going to have some explanation because, you know, the Maharal is very big on interpreting symbols. That's a major contribution of the Maharal, is his ability to interpret symbols for us, even when they are seemingly very abstract and difficult. Okay. Ki amru mitzad she Yisrael asu es ha'egel miyad shehotzi osamni mitzrayim, because by the fact that Klal Yisrael committed the sin of the egel soon after leaving Mitzrayim, So, remember, it says al keren shor. Shor is just the adult form of the ego, right? So it's the same thing. Okay. Im kein moresh ein lohem chas v'sholom chelek belokei Yisrael. By virtue of the fact that they turned away from Hashem and started worshiping the ego, or at least not protesting when others did, then it shows that they disidentify with Hashem and identify with this avodah zara, and that was the taina of the Greeks. They said, "Come on, we know that your nature isn't really to follow Hashem. Your nature is really to follow the ego. You demonstrated it in the past. Remember, there's a general principle that all the punishment that Klal Yisrael has suffered all can be traced back to the sin of the Chet HaEgel, right? Okay. Ki davar shehu be'etzem hu rishon na v'ha'egel hayar rishon. What defines you? What gives you identity? That's the first thing, and the eagle was the first thing. He says, "Yeah, v'zehu ma she'omru kisvu al keren hashor." That's why they said that, because it's a little hard to it's a little bit vague, but I think what he means in the first instance, that as soon as we left Mitzrayim, we started in with the ego, and so
as a nation.
So doesn't that show where our identity lies? Okay. And so that's what they were asserting. They said, "Why are you holding out? Why don't you assimilate into our idolatry and our culture?"
What does
Rishlam stand for? Okay. So, and they said, this is your history. It's not only your history, it's your identity. It's your true identity, they assert. And we want you to assert it again. Velo amru kisvu al niyor. They didn't say, write this down on a piece of paper, this statement. Ki hakeren haya min hashor atzmo. Because the keren, the horn, is part of the identity of the shor. It's the atzmius of the shor. Ratzol amar, she'osu ha'ego, v'ha'chet hazeh davor atzmi lahem. That's something that is intrinsic, something basic demonstrates where their identity lies. V'lo davor mikra, not just some chance thing that they happen to do. There's that word mikra again. As I told you, this is a frequent theme in the Ma'aral. U'lekach, ein lahem chelek belokei Yisrael. So really, you don't have a chelek in the God of Israel. The Ein Lecha Davor Shehu Kashe Yoser Min HaKeren. There's nothing harder, tougher than the horn, certainly on the animal, and therefore that hardness, that toughness is an indicator that this is really where your sympathies, your identity lies. Vamru Ki davar zeh yesh lahem li Yisrael mitzad koshi arpam, and it indicates, right, just like that there's nothing more kosher than the keren, so that hardness is reflected in that characteristic of Klal Yisrael that's called kishei oref, that stubbornness. Sheyesh bohem, that is certainly part of the national personality. V'koshi arpam bevadai mitzad atzmam. That's certainly one of their defining midos, right? Lekach ha'egel hu mitzad atzmam, and therefore the egel, which has a keren, which is kosher, and therefore they should be identifying with it. Yeah.
Shei orif.
Yeah.
The hardening of the neck.
A stiff neck.
Yeah. The neck is very close to the keren.
The keren is usually not located at the neck.
No, but it's close to the neck.
Okay. All right, so he stuck his neck out a little on that, but all right.
They're both on the animal.
That's okay.
He said they're both on the animal.
Okay. Kamosha Amar Hashem Yisbarach B'Maseh Ha'Egel, as Hashem himself says about Klal Yisrael at that time. Ra'isi es ha'am azeh v'hine am kishay oref hu. Heref mimeni. You know, let me get rid of them, right? Because of their, because I can't tolerate this stiff-necked attitude of theirs. Kach amru ha'yivonim. So along come the Yivonim, who know something about Jewish history. And they didn't understand the answer to this, the antidote to this, the argument against theirs. As it says in Yeshayahu, Hashem says, I will never abandon you. I'll never forget you. Even though Klal Yisrael may violate something as seriously as the eagle was, nevertheless, that identification, that bond with Hashem, it will never be broken. Because ze mipnei sheratzu ha'umar hazos levatel min Yisrael malasam ha'elokis ha'elyonah sheyesh li Yisrael. Because what was the point of what the Greeks were doing? They wanted to bring Klal Yisrael down from their exalted holy status, which comes from Torah, mitzvot, and relating to Hashem. And so therefore, they want to tear them down by saying, you really are not, you really aren't with the program as far as the Torah and Hashem is concerned. They wanted to cancel that and bring them down to their own level.
Did the Greeks believe in multiple gods?
True. You know what? If that were true, then they would have tolerated worship of Hashem. But as you see, they made all kinds of gezeros against the practices of the Torah, right? Again, especially those things involving Kedusha, like Rosh Chodesh and Bris Milah, and all those things that involve Kedusha, because they didn't believe in the concept of Kedusha. And they could never regard our worship as equals among theirs, right? So they weren't that tolerant when it came to us. They may have had multiple gods, but they wouldn't tolerate ours.
Well, no, I'm thinking this was their way of making sure they were subjugating the Jews. The Jews rebelled.
It's not just
God,
it's, it isn't only subjugating. It's also assimilating. That the main program was the Hellenization program, right? And the indications are that the majority of the Jewish people were following along in this assimilation, because that was the enlightened culture and everything else. And what comes with it? Avodah Zarah comes with all of that, with the philosophy and the art and everything else. So it was for those who held out that they had to persecute. Right, a lot of people were all too willing to join in, not too different than what we have today. Ulekach gazru alehim levatil mehem atorah elokis, and therefore they try to deny them their association with the divine knowledge of the Torah. And maybe we'll get into some more of that. We just finished. We have just finished the piece that we are going to do in this sefer. So, now we're going to go to the next page. Yeah. Ve'af gam malchus ha'revi'is gazru shemados. Right, persecution again. The anti-Torah, right? The forbidding of the learning of Torah. Al Yisrael bakama bakama devorim in many aspects. Ein ze domeh ki malchus revius lo hayosim ze b'shvil shomru lanu hamala well yona holokis. Because their argument, he says, is different than the Greek argument. They didn't say it because they have a greater, superior religion or culture. The goal of Rome was destruction. That's Edom. Edom is destruction. Esav is destruction. It isn't even a question of superiority. It's not only denying your religion, it's denying your right to live.
That was Edom.
That's Edom.
How was Yavon?
Yavon was ideological, cultural. Okay. So I'd like to...
Yeah. Is there a concept that is rooted in your God and our God?
It doesn't sound it. Otherwise, it wasn't. It was pluralistic for them, but not for us.
No, that was there for us.
There's much more to that. Maybe we'll get to some of that.
What would you say was of Rome that essentially the morale saying that the Jews did not know, besides religious concerns?
What else is there? I mean,
it was religious.
That's the main ones, Rabbi Akiva and all the Talmidei Chachamim, anybody who tried to teach Torah b'Farhesia, right? Asar hu harugei malchus.
We know that the Rambam, like you said, Rishchaydus, Rishmila, Shabbos, those were gezeiros that they said you can't observe. So
and others.
And so it's religious based.
Yeah.
So what were the Romans doing different than religious decrees as well? Because where is the difference?
Probably taxes and other things.
The religious part, I think, I'm not sure, the religious part, I think, came in because they felt that was part of the rebellion. They were very worried about the revolution of,
Like any totalitarian society, right? You see that totalitarian societies don't like organized religion. Why? Because the state... is superior, and if your allegiance should be only to the state, and when you say no, I have a higher allegiance, I have allegiance to Hashem or whoever you're even Catholics or whatever it is, you see that they don't like that and they persecute that because it's a worship of the state instead of a worship of a higher authority, since they consider themselves the highest authority. It's the same thing with Rome. Okay, so we're going to go to the next page, as I said, and this is from a different sefer. This is, yeah, where it says, Rabim Biad Me'atim on top. Okay, this comes from one of the Sforim of Rav Shlomo Karlbach. I don't know if you're all familiar with him or not. He lives around the block from here, and he has a series of Sforim. In this case, this was on the Parshios of Sefer Bereishis, and I have been a participant in his shir on Maharal for the last 30 years. So, in any case, this particular piece, Rabim Biad Me'atim, is from Parshas Miketz. Now, as you know, certainly you know, that Parshas... Parshas Miketz is always read on Shabbos Chanukah. And if there are two, that's one of them. So, huh? Okay. Oh, yeah, here we go. Okay. That's for the Mishnah Brewer discussion. Okay. So, that's why it's here, because this was originally probably a lecture that was given in honor of Hanukkah. So it's like six pages. We're not going to do the whole thing, but I want to do certain relevant parts because it all connects to things we've just seen in the Maharal. Okay? So it opens here. I'm going to do maybe two and a half pages of it here. So in this first part, the Pasuk that this relates to in the parsha, Vayiftachu echod esako loseis mispo lachamoro bamolon vayar eskaspo vihinehu befi amtachaso. This the incident where they had bought food in Egypt, and then Yosef ordered to sneak their money back into their bags. And so, when they opened the bag on the way home, when they were going to feed the animals, one of them found the money. Okay, so now we go into the paragraph, Perush Rashi, Vayiftachu Echad, one of them opened it. Who's the one? Who Levi, says Rashi. Shenishar Yochid Mishimon Ben Zugo, because he no longer was with his buddy Shimon, who was now being held in Egypt, right? Okay, Ad Kan, that's the Rashi. So now Rav Kalbach poses the following question. Eino muvan le'eza to'elas huva diyuk zeh. What's the point of identifying this one brother as Levi? Umay nafkamina, what do we care? Im haya Levi o echad, or acher rather. She matza es kaspo ba'am tachto. Who cares which brother found the money?
One cause for the others, the problem.
Okay. Sheyigrom lechulam sheyetze libom, right, and that would cause them this anxiety. Usheyachardu ish Elohiv lemor mazos asa Elohim lonu. They got scared when they saw this. What does this mean? They assumed it meant something terrible, and they all assumed that. So what does that have to do with why Levi in particular? V'yitachen sheelu matza. Is that one dot there? Okay. She'ilu matza echad min ho'achim es ha'kesef, ho'ya toleh zeh b'mikre. There's that word again. Okay? If any other of the brothers had found it, then that you consider it a by chance. Okay? U'b'mishke.
Error.
In error, right. V'lo hayu sh'ar ha'achim nis'orerim lefashfesh b'maseihem u'laharher b'tshuva. And if any other of the brothers had found it, in other words, it wouldn't have been a cause for all the brothers to be worried and to therefore to examine their hearts and do tshuva, which was the result of all of this concern and anxiety. Al kain sibev Hashem yisbarach Shelevi yeh horishon sheyimtza es kaspo. Therefore, Hashem arranged it so that Levi was the first one to spot the money. Ula hagid le'achov hushav kaspi, and then he tells the brothers this phrase: hushav kaspi, my money was returned. Hushav bekevon v'lo b'mikre. He said it, this. He purposely used this terminology, and not by chance. And it was he. And no other. Begam hine ba'am tachti. Ba'ofan she'ein lachshov shehusam shom b'mishgeh. There was no mistake that this happened. Lachain tafsam charada v'yiras Elokim. And therefore, their yiras shemayim was heightened as a result of this. V'taracha kusuv lahagid kol zeh batorah. And the Torah goes to all the trouble of telling us these details. Simon ledoros haboim, as a sign of what would happen in the future, or as a lesson for the future. Sheye Levi hamyuchad bashvatim, that Levi would be unique among the shvatim, that he would have a unique role. Shehu dal mishar ha'am, that he was separate, different than the rest of the nation, the Leviim, that is to say, umorim umlamdim es derech Hashem, and their role was to teach and guide the people in the derech Hashem. Kemoshe kasuv yoru mishpotecho liyakov v'sorascho liyisrael, and Levi is assigned in the according to the pasuk, and this is in Zos HaBracha, right? Render judgments and to guide Bnei Yisrael in the ways of the Torah. Vehen yakiru es darchei ha-hashkocha, and they would recognize the path of right of the hashkocha of the influence of the proper direction. She einon b'mikra, that and this was not by chance. V'teva hadvarim, it just didn't happen naturally. Ela kol haba al Yisrael nisyached bishvilam me'es Hashem yisbrach. That all of these things, all of these circumstances, were arranged for a reason by Hashem. Now, okay, so we haven't gotten any closer to Hanukkah yet, right? Okay, don't worry. Umitam zeh. Mina Yaakov Avinu es Shevet Levi lilchom keneged Malchus Yavon kasher yisba'er. And it was for this reason, because of the role that Levi is to play in our history, that Yaakov assigns Levi the job of fighting against, combating the influence of Yavon. Shekein amru b'midrash, b'shoshif kid Yaakov banav es tafkidom, when he handed out assignments, you know, every shevet has a different role, so when he handed out assignments to each in the form of the bracha, l'chom keneged ha-misnagdim ha-omdim aleihem, each one had an assignment to fight, to combat the forces arrayed against them. Sivola Levi sheyamod keneged Yavon. Levi was assigned the task of fighting Yavon, opposing Yavon. Be'omro ze shevet shlishi beze malchus shlishis. Levi is the third of the sons in birth order. Okay, and Yavon is the third of the malchuyos. Okay. Min horba malchuyos hamishabdos es Yisrael ba'olam hazeh. That's one aspect, the threes. Ze osiyosav mishuloshim, ze osiyosav mishuloshim. Levi, three letters. Yavon, also three letters. Both, by the way, having the yud and a vav. There's only one letter difference. Elu merubin ba'uchalsin, ve elu mu'atim ba'uchalsin. One had, meaning the Greeks, have a large population and means and arms and armies and so on, and the elamotim, and whereas Levi is small in number, and I remember somebody once described, you know, they weren't warriors. The Levium are not, the Kohanim Levium are not the warrior class for sure, and yet they were assigned the mission of opposing the Greeks. Bo merubim b'naflu biad mu'atim. A paraphrase of what we know. That's what we say in Al Anisim, right? The Ezezachus, why do they merit this particular role? Mi Birchas Oshel Moshe. Remember, we have Birchas Yaakov in Vayechi, and we have Birchas Moshe in Vezos HaBracha. And what does it say in Vezos HaBracha? Shenemar, Borech Hashem Chelo. This is regarding Levi. That Hashem should bless their armies, okay? Upa'al yodav tirtzeh, and their actions, their achievements should be acceptable to you. Machatz masnayim kamav, those who rise against them should their bones should be broken, smashed. Umisanov mi yukumun, and those who hate us. From arising. Okay. And all of this was brought down in Bereishis Rabbah in Vayechi. Oh, Perek 99. Yeah, that's Vayechi. Yeah, by the Bruchos. For Rashi Peresh, Al HaPasuk, Bezos HaBracha, that's what the abbreviation means. In that pasuk, referring to Levi in the Birchas Moshe in Vezos HaBracha, Ra'ah Sha'asidin Chashmonai Ubonov Lehilachem Im Hayavonim, because it was foreseen that the Chashmonoim and their children would fight against the Yavonim. His Paleil Alehem, and it's a prayer for them. Lefisha Hayumutim, because they were few in number. Then there's this very mysterious phrase that Rashi here brings. Yud beis b'nei chashmonoi ve'elozor keneged kama rivavos. The 12 sons of the chashmonoim plus Elozor, Elozor being the Kohen Gadol, against the multitude. We don't know who these 12 are. Okay, we know of 5 sons, right? That we know of. We have no idea who these 12 are. I don't think anybody has a satisfactory explanation. I sometimes wonder if that's a printing error, but that's what it says in Rashi. Umidivrehem, hu hamakor so keta baal hanisim. And that's the origin of the phrase that we say in al hanisim. De Chanukah. Masar, at the top of the page. Next page. Masar to giborim biad chaloshim, rabin miad miatim. Right? based on it's all based on this idea of the bracha that Levi received. Minish arnu tzmeim, and we are left thirsting. Ladas malashevet Levi etzel mechemes Yoven. Really, why Levi? It's still okay. Well, he's gonna continue in a second. Befracha shevet Levi bedera klal eno yotzei lemilchama. Since Levi are not the type of folks, they're not the warrior class, as we said. Yeah, the educators, the people who worked in the Beis Hamikdash. Excuse me. Umashamru zem mishulosh v'zem mishulosh bein beseder dar gosam bein mispar haosios shel shemam. Whether this threeness. Of Yavon or of Levi, okay, it's three. Pashut hush eno ella l'simon ba'alma. It's certainly nothing more than symbolic, right? The ein bo shum siba lama yisnaged zel azeh bekolchos hanefesh, and it doesn't indicate in any way. I mean, we're not left with a real logical reason to understand, other than the. It sounds like the coincidence of threes, but really it isn't. But what is it that matches them up? Gam Yehud Han Haga Zos Shel Rabim Biad Matim. Even that, the many against the few. L'shevet Levi Tuva Ar Baor. It needs Beur. It needs explanation. Okay, so let's continue with the next paragraph here. Dorshu Chazal Bayikar Rabba on the pasuk in Yirmiyahu. Okay, now let's look at this. Al Kane, he come, Aryeh Miyar. Now, the Yirmiyahu is going to describe what the Medrash has here in Vayikra Rabbah, in Parsha Shmini, which this particular chapter, 13.5, is like the mother load of material on Arba Malchios in the Medrash. There's just a huge amount of stuff here. And one of the things they bring down is this pasuk in Yirmiyahu. And we didn't learn this pasuk as a reference to the Arba Malchios, but it's going to sound very familiar. It says, therefore, the pasuk says, Alkein hikam aryeh miyar, the lion of the forest will strike them. Zu bavel, says the Medrash. Ze'ev arevos yishadadim, the wolf of the desert will plunder them. What were you going to say?
Didn't we have before instead of we had the doe?
Yeah, right. But you see the parallel already, right? Yeah. Between Daniel's dream and Yirmiyahu's prophecy here. We're going to see it's identical, pretty much. Except you're right, but you have to go with the wolf rather than the dave rather than the dove explanation, in order to make the parallel complete. Zu modai nomer shoked al arehem, the leopard will move quickly against their cities. Ze yavon, and we've been talking lately about Alexander the Great and his rapid world conquest, rapid in terms of his age and how quickly he moved. So shoked is an indicator of moving quickly. Okay, describing the conquest of by Yavon under Alexander the Great. Kol ha-yotzei mehena yitar reif, and whoever goes out from there will be torn apart. Zu Edom. Notice there's not a name of a particular animal, just like in Daniel, where in what we read earlier and what we know, that the fourth animal is not describable. Not described, okay, other than its characteristics, but the species is not identified. Okay, so now we have a restatement, and the important element here is the Namer as Greece. Perish HaMaharal, in Ner Mitzvah, later on, it's a later page than the one we read, V'karohu Oso Namer Shehu Azponim. We call he is compared, he being Greece, is compared to a leopard because the leopard is known as an Azponim. Now, does anybody want to try to define what Azus is? It's not easy. What? defiant, arrogant.
In your face.
In your face. Okay. We know there's a... And how do we know that the Namer has this quality of Azus? Okay, what does Chazal say? And I think it's stated here somewhere. Havei Az Kenamer, right? You should be as Az as a leopard in what? In doing the Ratzon Hashem. So, what do we see? We say chutzpah. So, on the one hand, Azus means brazenness, chutzpah, disrespect, right? All those things. But then we're told we should be Az Kenamer in doing Hashem's will. So that can't be the definition, can it? Okay? So we're going to see how an attempt to resolve this, to find a better definition that works. Okay? But in the case of, in both in the negative, in the sense of how do we understand this in terms of Yavon, and how do we understand this in terms of our own actions, because we are also told to be Az, right? And since we are told to be Az, and they are identified as Az, so we see already a conflict between two nations that have a similar personality characteristic. Both have Azus, and they're both bumping up against each other. Okay? Umalchus shlishis, lo haysam of akeshes rakli tomehem atorah hasiklis. According to the Maharal, the only thing that the Greeks wanted to do, they were not out to destroy us, as the Romans were, but all they wanted to do was to deprive us of the Torah, which is sichli. The Torah is not something that is physical. The Torah is something that is intellectual. L'kach ra'ah osam Daniel kamo hanamer shehu az. And therefore, Daniel, going back to where we started, visualized the Namer, which we know has a characteristic of Azus, and identified them with Yavan Ulakah, Hoyono Heg Bimido Hazos Bemalchuso, and therefore it acted in that way when it was running the show, when it's Malchus. Ki Ha'azponim, now we're going to get a definition, I think. Ki Ha'azponim Omeid Keneged Acher Umisnagedlo. The Azponim, the mitzvah of Azus is defined as standing up against your opponent, Umisnagedbo, and opposing him. The Eno Rotzeh Shiyeh Lacher Shum Mala Rak Hu Omeid Bazuso Negdo. He doesn't back down from a challenge. That is the working definition here that we're going with. So, you can say if a kid is a chutzpahnik, because he talks back to his parents or his teachers. We can say he doesn't back down from a higher authority. But that's wrong, because it's a legitimate authority. But in the case of Klal Yisrael versus Yavon, that you have two nations that don't back off from one another. Each one claiming to have the higher authority, the higher intellectual, the superior intellect and the superior body of knowledge. That's what we're talking about here. Okay? The ein oseh davor zeh shiyeh gadol v'choshuv v'lo hayo lahem to'eles ma. And they didn't have this, they had this idea of superiority. And they had rak kamo az ponim sh'eno neheger ba'azu so. Why does this person do that? Was it for their own benefit? No, it's because the Greeks, when you know, they were very. I was thinking about this when we talked about Alexander. Alexander was not only adventurous as a conqueror. We have loads of anecdotes in the Gemara of things that Alexander did. Wherever he went, he was intellectually curious as well. Right, there's the stories of him in Africa, and plus his the questions that he asked Chazal when he was in Eretz Yisrael, and so on. He was an intellectually curious person. He was always trying to learn about other values and cultures and trying to learn the wisdom of other people. In that sense, he was kind of more tolerant and respectful of that knowledge. There's one story of Alexander and the Amazons, if you remember that in the Gemara. Anyway, but that's part of the national personality you don't know what I'm talking about, an all female warrior kingdom. Yeah. No, that, but it's in the Gemara we're talking about. He found such a society. But the idea is that they were intellectually curious, and then what happens? They come to Eretz Yisrael, and they're occupying Eretz Yisrael, and they discover that there's here's a culture that has something called Torah knowledge, and here the Greeks think they have the most advanced knowledge, science, culture, arts, everything, right? And then they come up against a society in Klal Yisrael which is Torah based, and so they try to get into it, right? And that's why we have the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Torah. They wanted to try to capture that knowledge for themselves. But beyond that, that's just Torah Shabbat, and that wasn't even such a great day for us. But Torah Shabbat Peh, they could never grasp. And concepts like Kedusha and other things, they could not grasp because they were interested in rational thought, nature. We'll talk more about that. but coming up against a body of knowledge that really was superior to their own for the only time, they couldn't take it. That's the meat of it. They couldn't back down from the fact that they had bumped up against a superior body of knowledge. So what was their reaction? Tear it down. Get rid of it. Yeah.
What's such a problem with Kedusha that they can...
Because they believe in nature.
In what?
Nature. The forces of... Their gods are the forces of nature.
Okay.
And anything that is above nature, they could not grasp.
They have some priests who serve their gods.
It's not the same thing. It's still worshiping nature, and anything that rises, that transcends nature, is totally alien to them.
Even they have some church and some priests, it's still
not the same. No, those are just functionaries for their nature worship. It's because you have the sea and another one for the thunder and so on. So because they didn't understand the forces of nature, so they worshiped them. Okay, and that's why they outlawed Kiddush HaChodesh and Bris Milah and things like that, because those things transcend the physical. They couldn't handle that. So that's why I'm saying their reaction to not being able to handle that resulted in they had to tear it down, or at least tear us away from it and rob us of it. And so they could remain the superior, the beings that they thought they were. Okay? I'm going to skip the next short paragraph, and where the bracket is there.
I say the Jew this time bring carbonos.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they don't bring some. They don't have some knowledge.
But they don't have the same meaning.
No, I say they don't bring some animals.
Of course they do. But then the meaning is different. The meaning, and whom are they trying to please? A completely different idea. You're offering because you want to please Hashem, and they want to please and appease their gods, because they have their agendas. But those are different things. Those are different concepts. Okay. Okay. So, skipping down to where the paragraph that starts Va'od, where it's bracketed there. Va'od yesh rom ma'alo achas al kulon. And there is one higher degree above all, v'hu ma'alas tzelem elokim. And that is the quality of Tselem Elokim. Because the person is not just a goof, a person not just the physical, but he's implanted within the human being, as we know, is the Tselem Elokim, Sha'al Yisrael Ga'avaso, which is the pride of Klal Yisrael, having this this Tselem Elokim, not that humanity doesn't, but in the Maharal's idea is that we have it to a higher degree, a higher level. By Ayivanim Choshvu Esatzmam Miromem Mikulam, and they thought they were the superior beings, right, over everybody. Ayidei Koach Hasichli, why? Because they had the intellect, the intellectual power. Sheetzlam Mivareches Hazaken Al Yaf Yefuso Shel Yefes. Here he's referring to Noach speaking and describing Yefes. Yaf Elokim Yefes. What's the next word? The Yishkan Baalei Shem. Right, but that's the key phrase: is the Yaft Elokim, the Yofi of Yefes. That's which is the who's the progenitor of Greece of Yavan. Behi Chachmas Yivonis. That's what in the Gemara calls Chachmas Yivonis, Greek knowledge. Shedibru Oleha Chachomim. Okay, that's a body of knowledge that it may sometimes overlap with Torah, but it isn't Torah. It's secular knowledge, basically. Ulefi shemakirim shezos hamala ha'elokis, and because they recognize that this divine mala tselem elokim nimnaas mehem, it detracts from their status. This is what I was saying before. Ba'al Yodam Misromemim Yisrael, and this is the means by which Klal Yisrael is superior, right? Lema'alas mikol ha'umos, above all other nations. Lekach his azru b'midas azus, and therefore they reacted in with azus, the azus hanomer, like which symbolizes who they are. The four b'malas elokis, and they rejected the concept of the tzelem eloki shel Yisrael. Be'amram im hamala azos nimnas meitanu gam eschem lo tie. If we can't have it, you can't have it either. That's exactly right. Okay, then the next paragraph, the one at the bottom, osa kifirah b'tzelem elokim ve'adikusam. Their rejection of the Tselem Elokim and their sticking to aduk means to be sunk in, to be saturated in the power of the intellect, ha'anushi, the human intellect, goremes lahem shitasam ha'philosophis, it gives rise to a philosophical view, shel sich lasanus, intellectualism, shekarin la rationalism, that only, you know, logic, right? That's what the Greek developed to the highest degree is logical theories. But there's something beyond logic, and that's Torah. Torah logic is a little different than Greek logic, so-called rationalism. The inyanahu shelo lahamin o lahakir shum davar, not to acknowledge or recognize or accept anything, sheyotzei chutz lehasoga seichel, anything beyond the capability of the human intellect, right, which is, that is the divine, is they reject it. Ha'anushi. Shitozos amedes b'nigud la'torah, it's opposed to Torah, shehi seichel eloki, which is divine intellect, v'nitna l'shokneo for matnas matana me'olam elyon, and which is a gift, it's a God-given gift from above, not developed by, those Jews among us who think that the rabbis made it all up, right, the so-called rabbinic Judaism.
Rationalism.
Rational meaning the product of the human seichel, as opposed to the product of Hashem's seichel. Hisnagdus hashito hazos leemunas Yisrael, the opposition of this ideology to the faith of Israel, she Torah nitna min hashamayim, he hasadeh milchama. That's the battlefield. Sheba hariv bein chachmas haTorah lechachmas yevonis, which in the conflict between the Jewish chachma and Greek chachma. Vehi hakfira b'tzelam elokim shebo huchturu zera ha'avos, and this is the rejection of the tzelam elokim which crowned the descendants of the avos. Vehu nimna min b'nei yafes, and it was denied to the b'nei yafes, the Greeks. Hashkafa li'ra'ah halazu, this evil hashkafa tzomachas, grows mitoch nefesh ra'ah, within an evil character. Mimidos mushchasos, from corrupt values, shel umos ha'olam, of the goyim. Midas azus yevonis, that's the mida of the Greek form of azus. Azus de tuma, she'oleho amru, az panim legehenim. That's what the Pirkei Avos says, that az panim ends up in Gehenna. Okay? Mishakeres benitzchius ha'adam b'tzelem elokim, someone who rejects the idea of the tzelem elokim. Now we're just going to do one more short this next paragraph. Then from then on, I'll just summarize a few points in this. Le'umasa omedes midas azus dikedusha. In contrast, remember we said before that it's a two-sided. Azus is a double-edged sword. That's what he's going to say. There's a positive quality of Azus as well. The kedusha aspect of Azus. Shehu's karaba oso mishna de avos. In the same mishna in Avos, it says az panim legehenim. All right, Yehuda ben Tema, the same person said havei az kenamer. That's the phrase we said before. Lasos ritzon avicha shebashamayim, to fulfill the will of your Father in heaven. V'kasav hatur, and the tur behakdama lechiburo hagadol, in the introduction to his great work, cites this very pasuk. That's how I believe it opens. Lefi shepamim adam chafetz lasos mitzvah, because sometimes a person wants to do a mitzvah benimna, and he backs off, he denies himself, mila asosa, mipnei bnei adam shemali gimala, because people make fun of me, you're old fashioned, what are you doing this for? Isn't this the 21st century already? How many times do we hear this? And we don't only hear it from Goyim, we also hear it from our own. Bial Cain, and therefore, he's here, that's why the Torah warns us, havei az kanamer, be az, like the namer, sheta iz panecha, and don't back down. You're not up against a legitimate authority. You're against a rejectionist ideology. Stand firm. Right. Keneged hamalig, against those who deride you. And don't decline from doing a mitzvah just because somebody is going to be critical of you for it. Ayin sham. That's the Musar over there in the introduction by the tour. The Tema ala tour. And it's amazing that the tour, what ma ra'ah, the memrazu, what did he see? La'amid b'pesach chiburo. Why did he put this in his introduction? There are always those who doubters and rejectionists. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but basically what he says is that the idea of Levi was the one who was to keep us on the straight and narrow, to provide the Musa, the direction, the Hashkafa. That's what we said earlier. And therefore, when the rejection has come, who stands opposed to Yavan? It's the Shevet Levi. Okay? And the lesson for us is the same lesson as the Torah said, because, you know, here we are, and, you know, we are doing our best to observe, to learn Torah and observe mitzvos, and there are those who, as I said, both, you know, Hellenists, the Hellenists were Jews, not just Goyim. We had the Hellenists at the time of Hanukkah, and we have our Hellenists today. and they're always being critical and rejection and you know, and they make fun of us for being, you know, old school. And that's the lesson here, that we have to maintain our azus in the positive sense and not back off and not shrink from these criticisms, and we have to remain steadfast in our beliefs and in our actions. Okay, that's the end of that part. Okay, but now we're seeing the connection between the first part where we talked about the namer and now we've understood it in a deeper sense, what that azus means and why Shevet Levi. Okay. So now we're going to look in our Siddurim. Okay, so we're going to look at in our Siddur. In the Ashkenaz version, I think it's 357. If you happen to have a sparred one, you'll have to look it up. We're going to look at Ma'oz Tzur.
Excuse me, what page? 357?
Try that, if you have an Ashkenaz.
Yes.
Okay. This is why I don't talk for such a long time. I start to lose it. So for those of you who, you know, it's time for a shameless plug. For those of you who have this sefer, and you've gotten all the way to the end, or you've skipped to the end, and you've read my piece on Ma'oz Tzur, it'll be familiar.
When do we start lighting the candles and the menorah?
Saturday night.
Motzi Shabbos.
After Shabbos.
Okay. So, you know, we all sing Ma'oz Tzur. Okay. And yes, it's beautiful musically, but what are we saying? What are we singing? What is this all about? So, we're going to go through it. And also, okay. So that's, if you look at it closely, you will see that it's talking about the Arba Malchios, except that there are some things we need to know about it. And, of course, it's a standard. I see it's in the Eidot HaMizrach Siddur also. So apparently everybody accepts this as a part of our Hanukkah menorah ceremony, and of course it's a piyut, so it's written in poetic style. Now, apparently it appears to have been written in the middle of the 13th century, and it had five stanzas, and we don't know who wrote it, but I'm sure you've seen this, that the first letter of each stanza, right, is an acronym. It spells out Mordechai. So presumably the author was somebody named Mordechai, but we don't know who that is. And frankly, we don't need to know, because what's important for us is not who wrote it, but what is the message. Now, as I said, originally there were just those five stanzas. However, later on, a sixth stanza appeared. I think in the 1500s, and we'll see. And by the way, it used to be that every different sitter you picked up had a different version of the sixth stanza. And when we get to that, we'll see, you know, which versions you know, and we'll compare them a little bit, because there's different wording. And let's see. Let's examine this and analyze this. And see just what emerges. Okay, so the first, it starts Ma'oz Tzur Yeshua Si, the rock of my strength and my salvation. L'cho no'e l'shabeach, it's a wonderful thing to praise you, Hashem. So what are we starting out with? We're starting out with a prayer, basically, a wish that we a bakasha to Hashem. Tikkun beis tefilasi, to restore to the my house of prayer, v'sham todan ezabeach, and there we will bring offerings of thanks. Now this is written in the future tense because it hasn't happened yet, right? So we are asking for this to happen. Le'es tochin matbeach. When you prepare, tochin is to prepare a matbeach, a tevach, a slaughter. Mitzor hamenabeach, of the enemy who menabeach, it says, means blaspheming, means but it basically means somebody who is anti the Jewish people, anti Hashem. Ozegmor, then we will conclude Bashir Mizmor with a song of praise, Chanukas HaMizbeach, the dedication of the Mizbeach. Okay, so we see a forward-looking, a future-looking request that Hashem bring about the Geula, bring about the Mashiach, and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? And now, the second paragraph. And that deals with Mitzrayim, as we'll see clearly. Ra'os Savon Nafshi. My soul was sova, was satisfied with trouble. Biogon kochi chila, in my agony, my strength ran out, was exhausted. Chayai meraru bikoshi, my life was made bitter with hardship. Oh, so now we see already terminology associated with the Mitzrayim and the Shibud of Mitzrayim, b'shibud malchus egla, in the domination by the malchus of the egla. Egla is a reference to a pasuk, egla yefeithiyah Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is compared to an egla. Not the egel, no, but an egel. They worship a whole bunch of things. Yeah. Yeah. So, right, and that has to do with the Korban Pesach, right? The sheep, right? But it's a little different. But the point is, it's a direct proof text. It's a direct reference in the Navi to Mitzrayim and the Egla. Ubiyado hagadol la, and with the great hand, hotzi es haskula, brought out the treasured nation. That's us, the Am Segula, right? So this is our liberation from Mitzrayim. Chel Paro, the army of Paro, v'kol zaro, your duke Evan bimtzula, sank like a stone in the depths. Okay, obviously. Talking about Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay, so that's Mitzrayim. Why Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim is, and we've said this in Shir before, Mitzrayim is the prototype. Mitzrayim is the prototype of Shibud Malchios, and it's the prototype of Geula. Right? This is Maaseh Avos Siman Lebanim. So, and just as it happened that we were subject to the Shibud of Mitzrayim, but Hashem promised us that we would be redeemed. Similarly, in all our past and present Shibudim by the Malchios, so too we have Hashem's promise to redeem us that we hope for and rely on. So now we get into the Malchios themselves. Divir Kacho Heviani, you brought me to your holy Devir Kacho, my holy abode, as is translated, is one of the synonyms for the Beis HaMikdash. Right? Because what happened after Mitzrayim, we entered Eretz Yisrael and eventually built the Beis HaMikdash. Vagam Shalo Shakatati. But even there, things were not restful and peaceful. Uvano Geis V'Higlani, and an oppressor came and exiled me. We're talking about Bavel here. Kizarim avadati, because strangers, I served strangers. V'yein ra'al masachti, and poisonous wine it's not really poisonous, but it's intoxicating or that dulled my senses, basically, that I had drunk. Kimacho avarti, I had just left my country. That's what it means. And what this means is, we know that the Golus of Bavel lasted 70 years. So what he's expressing here is, we just left Eretz Yisrael for Bavel, and what do you know? Just like that, it's as if we had just left, now we're coming back. Kates Bavel, that's the end of Bavel. Now Zeru Bavel, Lekate Shavim Noshoti. At the end of 70 years, I was saved, and now with Zeru Bavel, the return to Eretz Yisrael. Right? We didn't learn that yet, but I think we will when we get to Ezra. Okay. Koros Kamas. Now we're talking about Paras Amada. Koros Kamas Barosh. This is about Haman, who sought to cut off Koros is to cut off Komas, the tall Barosh, the cypress tree. The Barosh is a symbol of Mordechai. There's a pasuk that we read on a Tinus, right? Tachas hanatzutz yale Barosh. The natzutz is the thorn, right? That's Haman. Instead of Haman, who had risen to power, Ya'aleh Barosh, will be raised the Barosh. The Barosh is Mordechai. So he sought to cut down Mordechai. Bikesh Agogi ben Hamdasa. That's what Haman sought. But it became for Haman a trap, right? And it calls it a stumbling block and a trap. But Gavasonish Basa, and his conceit, his pride, that was Haman's, that is, was nishbasa, was cancelled, shavas, meaning to put to rest. That's a good way of saying it. Rosh Yimini Niseisa, you elevated the head of the Yimini, that's Mordechai, Ish Yimini, right? The Oyev, Shemo Machisa, and you wiped out the name of the enemy, just as we do. Right, and it's also a reference to the Mechias Amolek. Rav Banov, his multitude of sons, Vikinyanov, and his possessions, Al Ha'et Tolisa, were hanged on the gallows. Okay, so that's the. So in other words, what have we seen? We've seen Egypt enslave us; we were saved. Bavel exiled us; we were saved. Paras returned. Paras threatened us, and we were saved. Okay, now the fifth paragraph. Yevonim, and that's obviously that's the main point of the Yevonim nikbitzu olai. The Greeks gathered against me. Azai bimei chashmanim in the days of the chashmanoim uportzu chamos migdolai, and they breached the walls of my towers. B'timu kol hashmonim. They're obviously talking about Yerushalayim, Ir HaKadosh, and the Beis HaMikdash, and they defiled all the oils. U'minosar kankanim, and from leftover jars. Naaseh neis lashoshanim. A neis was performed for the Kohanim. The Shoshanim, I think, is a reference to the Kohanim. Certainly for Klal Yisrael, and maybe specifically for the Kohanim. B'nei vina yemei shmona, the men of wisdom and understanding instituted that these 8 days, kav'u shir u'renonim, are to be days of song and praise. So one thing I noted here is that, notice that we have in Bavel, it mentions Zerubbabel. In Paras, it is a reference to Mordechai. Yevonim, it talks about the Chashmonoim. But nothing, you don't see any mention of Moshe in the second paragraph, Rosav Anafshi. I think it's a reference to that Moshe is not mentioned at all in the Haggadah, except for in Oz Yashir, and because it's Hashem b'chvodo uva'atzmo who took us out of Egypt. So I think that's incorporated in the in what's left out in that particular paragraph. All right, that's just an observation. Okay, so now that's the end of the original song. Five paragraphs. Is there anybody who doesn't sing a sixth stanza? Yeah, okay. Yeah, that figures. Okay. I can get away with that. Oh, so we don't know who added the sixth stanza. We don't need to figure it out. But what we need to know is why add a sixth stanza. And I think the reason is because the story isn't complete without it. Without mention of Edom, then we're missing a very, very important piece of the whole picture. And therefore, the sixth stanza was added. But, you know, there's the, you know, these days we have art scrolls. So art scrolls, the standard for everything. So it's all, you know, I guess everybody will be accustomed to singing only in the art scroll version. But there are other versions. But and anybody who sings with different you in this paragraph with different words, you know, we should know about it. I certainly recall this growing up that you know, we didn't know what to sing because everybody was singing different wordings depending on what sitter they were looking at. Okay, so it says Hasov Zeroa Kodshecha. bear your holy arm, which means the arm, of course, is the zeroa nituyah, right? Well, rogat, and so on. The is a symbol of Hashem's power. The korev kates haYeshua, and bring near the end salvation. Anybody say the korev yom haYeshua? Okay, I don't know that there's a material difference, but I'm what I'm pointing out is here, it's because this was added later, there are different versions. Some of them are more meaningful or more interesting than others. Okay. But there probably is also a proof text argument for Yom. Yom HaYeshua. There's probably Mekarev Yom and so on and so forth. There are enough references to the Messianic era in a term of Yom. You could probably find Psukim either way. That's the point. I don't think it's a major significant difference. Then it says, Nikom Nikmas Dam Avodecha, avenge the blood of your servants. Me'umah harisha'ah. There's that phrase again. From the evil empire, which is unnamed, maybe for a reason. It's censorship of a sort, but we'll see more of that. but obviously we're talking about the last 2,000 years, and we're talking about the persecution of the successors of Rome, who was the church, and then the Western civilization in general. Ki arka lanu haYeshua, because the salvation seems long, it has been long in coming. And mind you, if this was written in the 15th century, if they thought it was long in coming, now here we are in the 21st century, it's even longer in coming. The last paragraph. Yes. Okay. All right. Me'umah harisha'ah. Arkal lano haYeshua. Ve'ein keitz limei hara'ah. And there is no end to the days of evil. What do you mean there's no end? It feels like there's no end. It feels endless. That's that tahom concept. We don't know. It's unfathomable that it could have lasted so long, and we have no clue when it will actually end. Okay. Now the last line. I'm sure you've got different versions of this. Dehe Admon, Betzel Salmon. Does anybody have a different version of that? Does anybody say Dehe Resha Vegam Pesha? But you've seen it, right? Now, why would they do that? Okay, and that's obviously censored, because you know it's like it's placing the blame for the persecution on our own, you know, mipnei chato'enu kind of an idea. But really, that's not what it. It says, push down the Admon. Who's the Admon? Edom. Because Esav is called the Admoni, right? He's the red one. Okay, so now Betzel Salmon. Okay, I'm going to read what Art Scroll says. That's very official. I didn't mention Art Scroll. If you read this piece in my book, I didn't mention Art Scroll for that was the extent of my political correctness because I don't believe in it. he says the nethermost shadow. What does that mean? What does that mean? The nethermost shadow. Yeah, Salmon, Salmoves. Yeah, what does that mean? So, huh?
What is nethermost?
Like Gehenna, down there. Okay.
Gates
Al. Right, the valley of the shadow of death. Right. But what does that mean? So I think it means something very different, and that's why Art Scroll didn't put it in for political correctness. I believe it means in the shadow of the cross. The Tselem. Admon, Esav, Rome, Christianity. So, and remember, this is written in the 1500s when the church was both dominant and a persecutor, a major antagonist. So that's what I believe this means. And that's why you see the Chei Pesha Vagam Resha. They don't want it's censored, self-censorship. Okay? And then Hakeim Lanu Ro'im Shiva or Ro'esh Shiva. This is very mysterious. I don't know who the seven shepherds are. There's a pasuk that's brought down, but it doesn't really, you know, this one the idea of the seven shepherds is very mysterious, and I have no idea what it means. But I wanted to get. But the main thing that obviously it's a reference to Mashiach, but exactly what is it? I don't know what the seven shepherds means any more than I know what the 12 Chashmonoim mean that we talked about earlier, But the point is that, you know, about to bring Mashiach. To redeem and to avenge the persecution and to avenge the blood of our people who have suffered under the Malchus Edom. So now we see all these things, all these different sources that show us the context, the Arba Malchus context, and so I hope you gain something. Of a little more deep understanding of Hanukkah in that context.